Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread, and the only thing you'll think is delicious. You won't think it has up to 19 grams protein, 11 to 32 grams of fiber, or just 0 to 5 grams net carbs. But it does. Hero Bread. No compromises, just loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with flavor. Right now, get 10% off at hero.co with code IHEART. That's hero.co, code IHEART. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda White, and I'm really excited to share that I have Yolanda Renteria here. She is the author of the new book, Attuned and Attached, and we are going to talk all about attachment styles and oversimplification of it on social media and what attunement is. So, Yolanda, we're so excited to have you here.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I am really looking forward to this conversation.
Yes. Well, let's dive right in. Attachment theory more and more has been all over the internet. And that's part of why you wrote this book. So why don't we start with what are some of the oversimplified things you kind of see that make you wince, maybe?
Yes, I think, I love that people are so interested in learning more about attachment, right? Because I don't think we were having these conversations before, but I think that sometimes people might be too afraid that they're doing everything wrong. And when I talk to clients that I work with, I do sometimes feel like they might go into this perfect mode of like, I have to just do everything perfectly, which can even bring some anxiety around dating and relationships in general.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I think that is such a big thing that people feel like they need to be perfect. They need to fix themselves where I think probably attachment style we've known is more fluid, right? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So we know that the majority or attachment style mainly comes from our bond with our mom, right? And her attachment when she was raised in childhood, right, by her parents, the attachment that she developed is the one that she's more likely to show up in her parenting. But attachment is about safety. Yeah. Ultimately, how safe you feel in relationships is what determines how attached you'll be. And when we talk about attachment, it really is about the bond, the connection that you feel to another person. And safety is the stability of that bond, right? So if you know that a bond won't go away, even when things get hard, that's safety, that's secure attachment. But a lot of the times people don't feel safe in relationships because they have never experienced it. They might have even experienced the opposite, which is relationships are not safe. And if I attach to someone, if I'm vulnerable, if I create a bond with them, they will leave. So our attachment in different ways shows up in friendships differently, in our partnerships differently, with our parents is different, and it can change moment to moment. But the core of our attachment strategies is the kind of like the problem to solve and that people often find challenging and find difficult to create those safe spaces in their relationships, you know?
Yes. My gosh, I am resisting the urge to clap into the microphone right now because I just feel like that is it. That is such a phenomenal, simple but clear explanation. And I'm just so excited about your book because obviously I feel like before this book, you know, the main book that therapists kind of recommend is the book Attached, which did good work at the time. And I think, right, it sort of like gamified figuring out what our attachment style is. And I love how you're just talking about, yes, we can have like our natural inclinations based on how we were raised. But what I really heard that's like very hopeful in that is that we can have these sort of like corrective experiences in other relationships. And it really explains why I think people can feel like I am very secure. You know, I don't feel anxiety with my friends, but for some reason with relationships I do. Or I feel a lot of anxiety with my family, but not with my partner. And I am someone who I think I've had pretty like secure attachment with my family, but I moved a lot growing up. So I've actually really struggled with attachment with friendships because I always kind of had friendships end. I had like bad experiences where typically whenever like things were challenging, you know, friendships would end. I was, you know, I had an addiction, so absolutely played a huge part in that. So that I love like that you said that because it really helps me reframe how my attachment can feel so stable in some areas and then other places it's been more of like a growth edge for me.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of adults deal with difficulty forming healthy adult friendships. I think it requires more vulnerability too, because at least with our partners, we can fight about it, right? Like
yeah.
We can ask them like, lovely, please love me, or I'm upset that you're not loving me. But with our friends, that vulnerability, you know, we don't, a lot of the times we don't have the safety to do that. And it's also important, but not in that way. It's also not the healthiest to show up that way in our relationships because that doesn't really work, right? It's not about asking other people to love us, but more about developing this internal sense of being able to receive and feel loved. Mm-hmm. But yes, why would you invest in relationships and friendships if your brain has already developed a pattern that they will end? Mm-hmm. It's not really what your body wants you to do to put yourself in a situation where you're going to end up feeling pain. Yeah. And some of the work that I do with clients is I try to help them understand that it is not about avoiding that pain, but do you feel prepared to go through the pain of rupture or relationships ending for the plot, right? Like for mm-hmm. for the experience of love, because that's what love requires. That's what intimacy and closeness, which can feel very scary for people who have gone through really, really difficult heartbreaks, to put themselves in that situation so that the work often is very slow.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, we talk on this podcast a lot about the importance of rupture and repair and how it is sort of like this magic, you know, strengthening that happens. And it sounds like, right, if we frame that in attachment, how would you classify the importance of rupture and repair if someone's listening and they want to work on their attachment struggles?
That it's going to happen. Relationships are difficult, right? There, you have two humans who are trying to understand each other. We couldn't get along a lot of the times with our siblings, right?
Yes.
Let alone other people who are coming from a different environment, who have different opinions about things than you. So relationships are not meant to be easy in the way of there's never challenges or there's never disagreement. And if there is, then somebody's not being honest about how they feel, right?
Yeah.
A lot of the times we might have relationships that feel easy because we don't have a strong bond with them. Mm. But, you know, and I'm sure you, because you talk about rupture and repair, you know, like that, those are the moments where some of the biggest connection can happen. but we have to be willing to go through it and not just be rigid about it and cut off everyone who is not aligned with our point of view, or they don't treat us the way that we want, which is also a nuanced conversation.
Yes, absolutely.
But yes, so I guess in a nutshell, I would say you have to be open to doing difficult conversations and doing things that you're not used to in order to have long-term relationships.
Yep. And it gets easier, right? I mean, it's still uncomfortable and it's going to still be challenging. But I love also, Yolanda, that you talk about a lot in the book is sort of these somatic practices, the fact that your body, like some of this is sort of retraining your body. I think we think so much of, you know, mental health and doing things that are hard as just like a mental game. And to be able to do certain things, we actually have to address like how physically uncomfortable it is in our body. Like I know when I first started having like hard conversations with people, I would feel like I was going to die. And if you're not prepared for that, or you don't realize that that doesn't mean something's wrong, you're like, this is horrible. Why would I, this must mean I shouldn't do this. But it is very sort of like counterintuitive.
I love that you're talking about this because I think I mentioned that in the book. I don't remember, but it's like, oh my God, like everybody says, like, you have to get really good at boundaries and set boundaries, but nobody really talks about how like difficult physically they are, you know, and I felt like I was dying when I was like setting like the first big boundary. Mm-hmm. It was like, it felt a lot like I was doing something wrong.
Yeah.
And like my, you know, whatever was happening internally, I think it was fire. I wanted to come out of my body. You know, I just wanted to come out of my body and let my body just experience whatever it was experiencing. But yes, I when we go to the brain and understand the brain, we know that the brain doesn't want us to do anything that feels painful, and that includes emotions. So yes. If your brain that is always projecting past experiences into the future and into the now, you know, I love that we have this new research about how, you know, the body keeps the score in a different way, you know, like not in our tissues, but more into like our brain is reenacting past experiences in the present moment. And that's what's happening. And your brain will want to keep you safe by not having you reenact things that feel very difficult. And that's the internal battle, right? Mm-hmm. And the only way to get through that is to do something different than you're used to doing. There's no way around it. Mm-hmm. We cannot think logical through attachment repatterning or healing or, you know, whatever we want to call it. Attachment repair. We have to go through the physical experience of having new experiences. And when our body discovers that at first it's not like you didn't die, and then it's not that bad. And then it's like, well, actually, you know, actually this feels better. Yeah. It's gonna take some time to get there, but it comes through those experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like sitting in it, you almost have to, it's like you're retraining your brain that, because I think a lot of times too, like with avoidance and things like that, we get right up to the magic moment. We actually like start feeling all the horrible things that if we just stayed, we already feel terrible. If we just stayed, we could get to the other side, but it's like this hot potato that we get up there and we start feeling it and we're like, ah, and we panic. And then you never actually get to the point where you can like grow from that experience, which is so, I don't know. I always think of it as sort of like relapsing. It's like when you relapse and you're only like one day in, you did that horrible day, but you never start getting over the hump. Or when people tell me that they stop drinking for like, you know, 15 or 20 days. And I'm like, but you don't start feeling, you don't start sleeping better until 30, but you're going through that over and over again. That's how I think about it sometimes with attachment, where people are, they want connection. They're they're going to the point where they feel terrible, but then they don't stay long enough to get to the other side.
Absolutely. We're talking about like brain rewiring.
Yeah.
So multiple experience and thought shifting, right? Because a lot of the time, like if we don't shift the thought around the two, your brain will struggle more wiring that in.
Yeah.
Because it's conflicting information, right?
Yes.
But the more that you do something, your brain will have a chance to create new neural networks mm-hmm. that then will make that thing easier. But easier does not mean easy. Mm. It means more manageable, you know? And yes, when it comes to avoidance, I see it as this like freeze response, you know, like this, I want to like pull away from everything, you know, mm-hmm. this internal reaction of I want to protect myself. Mm-hmm. I guess it shows up very different depending on the situation, but people want to protect themselves from the possibility of heartbreak. And in that moment when they have to pause and do something different, their body will be screaming at them that they're doing the wrong thing, even when there might not be like any thoughts around what's actually happening, but more mm-hmm. of this narrative of I don't want to do this, or even blaming the other person, mm-hmm. right? Like I'm gonna apologize, but I feel like I'm in the right. You know, sometimes that is very consistent with people who avoid.
Yes.
It's such an easy way for the body to be like, I'm not responsible for this.
Yeah.
And even when we are not responsible for something, depending on the situation that we're in, we can also choose to show up differently. Mm. You know, which is something I also talk to clients about is, are you in alignment with who you want to be? Mm-hmm. Because if you're showing up every time based on reacting to how people are to you, then you don't really have a personality of your own. Mm-hmm. You have a reactive personality that is kind of like shape-shifting depending on the environment and very, very protective around not feeling hurt.
Yeah.
But yeah. What would it look like to actually align with what you actually want to do in those situations? Who do you want to be in that situation, regardless of what the other person is doing in that moment?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. So you talk in your book too, Yolanda, about like attunement versus attachment. Can you explain those two?
Attunement comes in the small moments, and you could also say it's a way of being present, but it's what happens in your body when you are paying attention, when you are fully present, whether it is to yourself, to other people, to your environment, to the small moments. I love talking about like the small moments.
Yeah.
Because it's like we have so many moments in a day. And sometimes we just kind of like wake up hating our lives mm-hmm. and go through the entire day, not reflecting on all of the small moments in between that are pretty pleasant.
Yeah.
So attunement to me is that, like, are you here? Are you paying attention? And attachment is just the bond that's developed after multiple experiences of attunement. Mm-hmm. And of course, like the health of the attachment is enjoying those experiences, but also you might be attuned to how something is not pleasant, right? Mm. Yeah. It's just about learning, what do I feel in these moments? How is this thing that's happening right now impacting me? Mm-hmm. And what is that doing in my relationships, in any type of relationship that I have?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, obviously, like attunement is something we talk about sometimes as there, like if you If you're going to grad school, if you're in a training, we talk about attunement to the client. So I love that you brought this term into sort of like attachment, and how I think it's so important because it does reframe like possibility and hope, that it's not just about this destination of secure attachment. It's you want to be able to be present. Like, that is the goal, isn't like, is to these moments of actually creating safety through attunement.
Absolutely.
I read obviously your book, Yolanda, and you, will you share a little bit more about your background and why you wanted to write this book and why you're especially, you know, connected to this idea of attachment?
Yes. I love relationships. I think when we're therapists, a lot of us just love understanding how people work, right? And you know, it's so interesting because when other people ask us about like why we won't go into this field and why would we want to listen to, you know, just problems all day, and it's like, we're not listening to problems. Like, we get to sit with someone and figure out how to make their lives better. And that's so exciting for me. So when I first thought about the book, my agent, you know, gave me an idea for the book based on a presentation that I had done.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, that I think that should be the book, you know? And I was like, okay, like, I love talking about relationships in general, but it felt just very aligned to talk to people about how they connect emotionally. And I think often when we talk about attachment, we talk about it in a way that might feel like it's really hard. Mm. And when I wrote the book, I wanted to write something that did not feel impossible for people to do. Yeah. So at least my goal was, I want to give people a lot of permission to just go through this process in whatever way they want to go through. And if their life can be better as a result of that, I have done my job. And that's why I also talk in the book about my own experience, because I grew up in an environment that I normalized. You know, as an adult, I was like, oh, I had a really good childhood. Like, then you go to therapy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this has been your experience. You know, that's sometimes you're like, am I really hearing myself?
Yeah.
Laugh. Yes. Like, is this really my life?
Totally.
And the more that, the more questions that get asked, you're like, oh, shoot, like, that was not fun. But yeah, so I wanted to connect with people in that way. Hopefully people feel connected in that way, that it's not like this problem to tackle, but it's more about, can your life be better every day with little changes that you make? So we don't have to think about the end goal. We don't have to think about like the destination of getting to the being like the ultimate, you know, boundary attachment.
Yes.
Or whatnot. Or king. It's more about, can your life just be better every day by applying something new that you learned in this book? And that was the goal of my book and my history. Just wanting to write a book, I feel like, you know, my husband would not make fun of me, but which he would say, like, oh, like, because I would always say, like, I want to write a book, but I would never start writing.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to write a book. I'm going to write a book someday. And he would say, like, Family Guy, Brian Griffin, and he would say, like, so what's that book that you've been working on?
Yeah.
You write it, right? And then we laugh now because it's like, see, like, it got done. Like, I know anyone, you've written books, you're writing it too, right?
I am.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited too. But yeah, like, it's such a process because you want to put information in the book that's going to help people.
Yeah.
And I know, like, my first copy was like, my first draft was 100,000 words, and it was,
oh my gosh,
so there's so much more.
Yeah. Anyway,
yes, in the end of the day, like, I would love for people to just know that they have a resource that they can use. Mm-hmm. It includes exercises, journal prompts. I really, really encourage people to, for a full year, do journaling every day if they can, if it's possible, around relationships so that they can explore more of their wounds and see how they're showing up in relationships so that they can have more awareness.
It is officially summer, and I have an incredibly controversial opinion, which is I actually don't love summer. There are elements of summer that I enjoy. There are elements of summer that I like. I don't like summer, and that is because I would rather be cold than hot all the time. There's nothing worse to me than being hot. And sleeping hot is even worse. And since I am a solution-focused person, I am constantly thinking of what I can do to alleviate this problem and make it better for me because it is so uncomfortable for me to be hot when I sleep. And one of the solutions that I have found is twofold. It is the Cozy Earth Bamboo Sheet Set and the Cozy Earth Bamboo Pajamas. When I tell you that these things have changed my life and made summer heat and the summer season that much more enjoyable, I cannot speak more highly to it. The material is so breathable. It is so comfortable. It feels like you are wrapped in a cloud while feeling like you are remaining cool at the same time. I don't know how to describe it. You're just gonna have to try it. Truly, they are incredible. And one of the things that I absolutely love about this brand is that their clothing carries a lifetime warranty. Any piece of clothing that you buy, lifetime warranty, you can return it anytime, get a replacement. Their bedding has a 10-year warranty. 10 years on your bedding. That is crazy. And it just speaks to how much they trust the quality of their product. Treat yourself to the cool, easy comfort your summer nights have been missing. Head to cozyearth.com and use my code NUANCEBOGO, that's NUANCEBOGO, to buy one, get one free. Did you hear me? They are doing buy one, get one free right now. Mix and match across sheets, pajamas, and towels. That's code NUANCEBOGO, NUANCEBOGO, at cozyearth.com for buy one, get one free. And if you see a post-purchase survey, please feel free to mention that you heard about Cozy Earth right here.
Valvoline Instant Oil Change.
If your service light's on, trust the techs with the training.
That's us.
270 hours with zero complaining. They train under the hood. They train down in the pit. 270 hours means their training's legit. It's the smart choice for smart folk who care for their steed. So trust the instant oil change that starts with Valvoline. Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Change wisely.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread or a fully loaded bagel. And the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it's up to 19 grams of protein, but it is. You wouldn't believe it has 11 to 32 grams of fiber, but it does. Hero Bread makes loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with taste, but without all the net carbs. We're talking 0 to 5 grams net carbs per serving. With Hero Bread, there are no compromises, just flavor. There's none of the stiff baked goods you'd expect from better-for-you brands. There's just the soft, fluffy bread you crave. Plus, small batch drops of indulgent favorites, like the popular 2-gram net carb Hero Croissant and 3-gram net carb Hero Pain au Chocolat. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code IHEART at checkout. That's code IHEART at hero.co. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
What do you feel like, Yolanda, about sort of this, it's not like a trend, but I do feel like more and more I've been hearing people say, I just don't, people just suck. I don't want any relationships. I don't need anyone. Have you seen that more in like, you know, online or in your practice? And yeah, what is your take on that?
I have. A lot of takes. You know, to be very honest, I love the internet, and then it's like, oh my god, there's this, like, it's so nuanced, right?
Yeah.
But There's only so much information that people can give in like short clips or, you know, like posts and things like that. Yep. And I love that we're having more awareness about, you know, how we are showing up in relationships. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, I do feel like sometimes we might tilt too much into the other end.
Yeah.
I think that is true for really most things. Life is not black and white. So I often talk to people about finding that center, you know, in parenting, if you go one way or the other, that's not healthy. In relationships, yeah. if you go one way or the other, it's not healthy. And the same thing is with boundaries, with cutting people off. Because if you're cutting everyone in your life, then you're not really getting a chance to be with yourself and learn about how you're showing up, you know?
Wait, let's pause on that. That is such a good nugget of like, yeah, if you are not in relationships with other people, you are like missing out on knowing yourself and like knowing these sides of yourself, who you are. Oh my gosh, I love that.
Yeah, because if you think about it, statistically, it's impossible for you to be right all of the time. Yeah. You can't. You know, I love the idea of being yeah. right all the time. You know, in my life, I felt like I was right. You know, especially like I have ADHD. You know, I know mm-hmm. I talk about that. And I have justice rejection sensitivity mm-hmm. and like this huge sense of justice that mm-hmm. shows up in everything. And I thought I was right all of the time. Mm-hmm. And I realized that it wasn't.
Yeah.
And it made my life better. Mm. It made my life better to know that I was wrong about a lot of things and that I could change them. But there was no way for me to change things if I didn't admit that I was wrong.
Totally. Oh, I love that so much. I think a lot about how, like what you said, you're like, we all think, I think the ideal is to be right all the time and that will like make us happy or things will be easier if everyone just listened to us because we were right all the time. But what I think a lot about a lot more and more is that if you live a very like black and white sort of life, everything then is either like amazing or terrible. And most of life is in the middle. Like there are definitely things, I'm not negating like how hard things are, but when we fall into that, when we think we're always right, we're not only, like you said, like missing an opportunity to you know, learn about ourselves, but I think we're also missing an opportunity to learn about our partner, learn about someone else, like who has a different perspective than us, which is fundamentally interesting. Hopefully.
Yes, absolutely. And then also, I think a lot of the times we might see being, if we're not right, then we're wrong. And a lot of yeah. people have a strong aversion to being wrong. A lot of the times shaped from childhood, right? Yeah. About how it's treated. There is this kind of like superiority, honestly, with like having the right take. Mm-hmm. I even see it sometimes in social media where people are like, no, like you're wrong, right? Like yes. I have a better take than you do. And I absolutely think that's the case a lot of the times. But there is this superiority around it, which honestly, the more that I worked on myself, I understood that most things were neutral mm-hmm. in the way that, yes, like you might have a better take or an educated take. And now you're teaching someone, and that's mm-hmm. amazing because that's mm-hmm. how we evolve as humans. And there is no moral superiority to having the best take or the most educated take, right? But what happens a lot of times relationally, even in spaces like social media, is that people want to be right. And so now there's a moral injury of like, you are threatening me, so I'm going to double down on being wrong, mm-hmm. and I'm going to show you why you are not superior.
Yeah.
Right? Totally. I see that happening so much in relationships, mm-hmm. in it impacts our ability to learn. And like you mentioned right now, to just be able to connect to what the other person is saying and what they're actually trying to show us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's sort of like the adage, you know, I think what we're talking about is the nuance of this is like the people who just say like, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Like that is oversimplified. And though there may be moments in your life where that happens and you may have to get your body on board with that. Because like you said, if you were raised in an environment or your experiences of being wrong or not being right really, you know, have impacted how you feel, it is going to feel threatening to be in a different position than you're not used to. And it can feel like an identity crisis sometimes. And I think what's like interesting about, you know, being a therapist who specializes in relationships like you do is there are just, you know, relationships are at the core of everything. And I think to our point of where we were kind of talking about how people who say, I don't want anyone, I don't need anyone, I think it's interesting because while I'm not saying people don't have different capacities and different needs, where some people truly do, like, you know, need less social interaction, want less social interaction, I think what's always interesting about that is like you are in relationships with other people, whether you are kind of, whether you consider that or not, like we're all in relationships with everyone, even if our relationship is that we don't want relationship.
Yes. And, you know, I think oftentimes people, when they hear conversations like these, they project their own life experiences mm-hmm. into the conversation. And it might feel, like you said earlier, it might feel oversimplified. Mm-hmm. And unless you are sitting across from someone and you're talking about your experience, then some of these conversations might feel oversimplified. But relationships are difficult, but they should not feel very difficult. And they should mm-hmm. definitely not be abusive. Mm-hmm. But what people know about abuse can look very different depending on what people have normalized. Yeah. What some people are willing to tolerate in relationships is very different from what other people are willing to tolerate. And some people are willing to tolerate things that are abusive. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like there's so much to this conversation of relationships and being in relationships, building healthy relationships. But if we start just with the basics of mm-hmm. is there abuse? And if there is abuse, which can exist in friendships too, mm-hmm. we need to work on that first.
Yes.
And the boundary, to me, the boundaries, you know, are about self-care. Mm-hmm. So is this a yes or no for you? How does that show up in your body? And are you often overriding your yeses to be in a relationship? Mm-hmm. Then that's a sign for you that there's something to work there so that you can show up and be and feel more fulfilled in relationships. Because you cannot possibly feel fulfilled in relationships if you're often overriding what you want to do or what feels right to you.
Such a good point. Such a good point. Yeah.
And then everything else is honestly more about like alignment and compatibility, which means sometimes you might outgrow relationships. Mm-hmm. And are you also okay with knowing when you outgrow relationships and not letting go of the friendship exactly? Like sometimes it might, depending, but sometimes it's just like, okay, like this is at this, you know, point in my life, this relationship no longer feels aligned. And maybe I don't see this person as often as I did before. You know, you mentioned like drinking. I bet like when you were drinking, you know, that lifestyle is very different and in alignment with certain things that might be very different to sobriety, right?
Yeah.
And there's no there's, it's not that it's, there's something wrong with it. It's just different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like we go through different phases and different life phases and different things. And I know like since becoming a parent, like my needs and time and things like that shift. And Matt, like I think one of the most unique things that I never talk about, but I think I'm thinking of right now is how I didn't realize when I had a, when I had a child, one of my basic needs would be spending time with my child. Yeah. Like I am not okay if I don't spend time with her, which is such a different way to think about it, I think, because, you know, I had it like to be a good mom. This is what, but it's like, no, I'm not okay if I don't spend time with her. And that's a fundamentally very different need that supersedes how much time I spend with my husband. Yes. Compared to before I was a parent.
Yes. And also it is likely to show up in your relationships too, right? Like I have friends that I've been friends with from high school, right? Mm-hmm. I immigrated to the United States when I was 11, and my very good friends are from high school, and I still, anyway, but my strongest friendships too have developed as a result of me really attuning with my needs and meeting people who are able to meet me there. Like I have, I have a friend today who's traveling 3 hours from 3 hours away to be here with me because my book launch is on Tuesday and he can't be here, but he still wants to show up. You know, I have a friend from high school who's flying me over to San Francisco to spend time with me because he can't make it, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's just all of these people who show up for you mm-hmm. in different ways, depending on the state of life that you're in. Mm-hmm. And I have other friends who are kind of like muted, right? Like they're not. Like the relationship didn't end and I still hold a space in my heart for them, but we don't have that closeness and we might never have that closeness again, but it's not aligned, you know, with where I am. And so I'm thinking, as you say this, I'm thinking if there's this strong desire to be with your baby, then finding people who are very supportive of that, who want you to bring that baby, you know, to lunch dates, who don't mind, who don't want, you know, I think that probably would feel so good to your heart. Mm-hmm. And that's my assumption. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So Yolanda, if someone is listening to this and I have two questions. I think one, I would love to address if someone is working on themselves and obviously go get Yolanda's book, Attuned and Attached, available everywhere books are sold. What are some of your favorite exercises from the book if you were to pick a couple to get people started?
I mean, the first one is just noticing how things feel in your body, which is very basic. And people who have done that work, you know, they might skip right through it. But having awareness of body sensations, emotions, and learning to name them. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times we're like, okay, I feel bad or I feel good. And I know the people that I work with, you know, hate to see me coming because it's like, well, can you tell me what good is? Another word for good or bad, you know, but it really is about, are you getting to know how you're feeling? You know, are you having time to be with you? And the other one is one that I learned at Equanimity from Barbara Collier and Jeannie when I was doing therapy with horses. We did a couple of intensives. And it's just this exercise about learning that you exist and putting pressure throughout of your body, like the outline of your body. Because a lot of the times we didn't really get that experience. And I think that exercise can bring a lot of awareness to people of how often they might not be aware that they're kind of like floating in space.
Yeah.
You know? So the main goal there is to bring you back into your body. Mm-hmm. So when you're existing in relationships, you can actually feel yourself exist. And I think that is so powerful because oftentimes we are so focused on everyone else that we don't have awareness of that.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. This next question is probably kind of annoying, but I know people who are listening are like, I'm struggling with my partner who is like, seems avoidant, or I'm dating someone who seems avoidant, or maybe my friend feels avoidant, or my friend feels anxious. What is your advice for them?
My mind goes like, well, I need more context.
I know.
Like, what's happening? But I would say, like, to me, it's go back to yourself and become an observer. You know, we know that people have their own wounds, and that means that the people that we're around will also have their own wounds. And that doesn't mean that we have to tolerate, you know, mm-hmm. the impact of that. However, to me, it's a lot about, okay, like notice what's happening in your body, in yourself. As this person does that, what is the impact that that's having on you? And what is in your control around this situation that you can do that aligns with how you want to show up in relationship? Which is a loaded question a lot of the times, because people don't even know how they want to show up in a relationship. They just want the other person to be different.
Totally.
Like, I just want them to be close.
Yeah.
And what I have this really cool exercise. I don't think I included it in the book, but I don't know.
Share anyway. It with us.
I put like two circles, uh-huh. right? And one of them is about your relational patterns. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is your perfect match. Mm. So for example, if you're a caretaker, mm-hmm. your perfect match is somebody to take care of.
Yeah.
And people hate that because they're like, what do you mean? Like, I just want them to be appreciative. And I'm like, it doesn't work that way, because mm-hmm. if your pattern is to take care of someone, if there's no one to take care of, then you're not going to be able to repeat this pattern.
Yeah.
And I know that you feel like if you find the right person, and that person just takes care of you just the same way that you take care of them, then you will heal from this. That is completely untrue, because chances are that person came into your life at one point and you were like, this, I don't like this person. Mm-hmm. This feels uncomfortable. You know, I know I had a boyfriend at one point in my life when I was very young, and he would bring me gifts every time I would see him. And I mean, it is a little excessive, but it would feel so uncomfortable. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God. And it would be somebody's dream, right? Mm-hmm. But he would meet me outside of work, and then he would have like this huge stuffed bear.
Yeah.
And I would be like, why is he doing this?
Yeah.
this is so uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I know. We would love to believe that if the right person comes along, then that's what we need. But in reality, if we are overgiving or caretaking in relationships, problem solving for others, you know, overriding our boundaries, we are likely to end up with people who match that. Mm-hmm. And we're also likely to feel very uncomfortable if we can't repeat this pattern, which is why it's important to do our own work, right? Because once you know that this is your pattern, then you can change it. Mm-hmm. And then you can see if this feels in alignment, how does this version of you now align with how the other person is showing up?
Yeah. I love that. I love that visual exercise. Yolanda, this was so great. If people want to learn more about you, where can they follow you and all that good stuff?
I have my main platform is Instagram. This is Yolanda Renteria. I'm also on TikTok. And my website is yolandarenteria.com. So I have a contact form that they can email me from there. Thank you.
Amazing. And everyone go grab Yolanda's new book, Attuned and Attached. Thank you so much.
Hey guys, it's Ashley Canetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast. You know, I'm always looking for simple ways to make better choices, especially when it comes to food. Lately, I've been using Wise Code, the ultra processed food detector. It's become one of my favorite apps. All you have to do is scan a product and it instantly tells you if it's ultra processed. If I want to dig a little deeper, I can also see the nutrition quality and overall health quality before I buy it. It makes grocery shopping so much easier. I've got little kids. They're picky eaters, but it really allows me to find brands that are going to taste good for them, but also make their bodies happy. You can download Wise Code on the App Store and give it a try today.